Everybody, this is the Wednesday afternoon, December 2nd, 2020 session of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, Keelan. Please call the roll.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Udaly, Fritz.
Here.
Ryan. Hardesty.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference. The City has made several avenues available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and Channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to Council by emailing the Council Clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The Council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, your flexibility, and your understanding as we manage through this challenging situation to conduct the City's business. With that, we'll hear from the legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published City Council at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected for the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
All right, thank you very much. We have two items together to start us off, items 939 and 940. Please, Keelan.
Results of the financial audit of the City Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for the FY 2019-20 and related communications, and 940, accept the City of Portland Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for fiscal year ended June 30, 2020.
Welcome, Madam Auditor.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I am City Auditor Mary Hall Caballero, and it is my pleasure today to introduce partner Jim Lanzarotta and Senior Manager Keith Simovic from the accounting firm of Moss Adams, which conducted the audit of the City's fiscal year 2019-20 financial statements. But before we get to the business of the audit results, I want to thank Mr. Lanzarotta for his years of service to the City of Portland. This is his last presentation before this council, before he heads off to a post-work adventure, and we will miss his enthusiasm for strong governance and sound accounting practices. The City's financial statements are important resources for community members, taxpayers, investors, and decision makers to understand what fiscal shape the City is in at a moment in time. Federal and Oregon law and our City Charter require that an independent audit be conducted of the City's financial statements. The purpose of this annual audit is to determine if the public can reasonably be assured that the statements fairly represent the financial position of the City. There are things financial audits don't do. They do not reach opinions on whether the City is spending appropriately, making good decisions, or what the long-term future may hold. The city has for years now been taking steps to complete the financial statements and the independent audit on a shorter timeline. It's worth noting that the disruption caused by a global pandemic did not deter Chief Financial Officer Michelle Kirby or Ron Vaught and Ashley Tuttle from her team or the staff across the city responsible for preparing the statements from again meeting the faster timeline to complete their work. Nor did COVID-19 deter Moss Adams from timely completion of the audit, or Audit Services Director Kari Guy from my office, who manages the financial audit contract. I appreciate their steadfast commitment to meeting this important obligation under very trying circumstances. I will now turn it over to Mr. Lanzarotta and Mr. Simovic to walk you through the audit results.
All right, thank you. And we do have a, first of all, Mary, are you hearing me okay? Thumbs up. Okay, perfect. And, I think we do have a PowerPoint, and I think you've got some staff there that can load that for us. Just a little something to help us organize our thoughts. So if you would advance the slide. Just wanting to share with you a little bit about the team that performed the audit, and really, what did you engage us to do? What is this financial statement audit anyway? So we'll chat about that. This was a very unique year, as Mary mentioned, the need to do a lot of this work remotely. So we'll talk a little bit about that and how that impacted our audit process. Of course, what you really want to know is, well, what did we find? So what is in our opinions and the reports that come out of this audit? There are some required communications of an auditor anytime we perform an audit, whether it's a city or a commercial enterprise. We've issued that in a written form to you, but I think it's a good opportunity maybe to highlight just a couple of those required communications, and then again talk a little bit about the folks that really put in a human effort to get this project done. Go ahead. So our team, we're very fortunate to have our team intact. I know from the city's perspective, it's a challenge when you have new faces and need to kind of educate a new team about the city and its departments, how it works, where the records are. So Keith Simovic is a senior manager with Moss Adams. He'll be helping me with this presentation and really was a key person in working with city staff. He's been on the job a number of years, so very helpful. Taylor Shimke was a manager on the job, and also was key in working directly with your finance staff to manage this audit in our team. And then Amanda McCleary Moore is a fellow partner with Moss Adams, and she does what we call a cold review of our work as part of our firm's quality control procedures. So pretty similar team to what we've had in the past. Go ahead, next slide. So when I think of our work with the city, I think of it in about six different phases. And maybe this might help you, especially some of you that may not be as familiar with a financial statement audit. That first phase, I think, is fairly well understood. We're going to provide an opinion on the accuracy of your financial statements. And we do that by digging in. I mean, we look at the source documents, the invoices, the statements, the contracts the city enters into. So what are these documents that exist that support both transactions, final balances in the financials, and disclosures that are required? You know, we look at bank statements and reconciliations. We're talking directly to the banks that the city works with and others that hold your investments to verify independently that those numbers are accurate. So I think we all have a pretty good understanding of that. You know, that document's pretty thick. It's too bad we couldn't have it kind of on our screen. Hopefully you have it in your hands. But that document to put together requires a lot of effort to meet all of the requirements. There is a Governmental Accounting Standards Board that provides the guidance on the form and format, what are the required disclosures, and so forth. And after we audit the numbers and the transactions, Now we got to look at that document and make sure that that accurately reflects all of that. And it meets all of these requirements of generally accepted accounting principles. And it's worthy to note, and I won't steal Michelle's thunder or Ron's, but your finance staff, they're not satisfied to meet the minimum requirements for a government, but they go above and beyond. And you'll see that last reference to GFOA, the GFOA certificate in that second box. So the Government Finance Officers Association decided that there's additional information that's useful to users, not required by the accounting standards, but the city decides to include that additional information and go above and beyond. So our work in reviewing the financial also covers the additional requirements of that Certificate of Excellence program. A third element that's not always as obvious is that we have an obligation to look at what we call internal controls. In other words, the checks and balances that management uses to get the financial statements right. And then we have an obligation to report to you if there are weaknesses. I mean, obviously, if the city doesn't have appropriate internal controls, then errors, both intentional and unintentional, could occur and not be identified timely. So that's an important part of an audit, and we'll share with you the results of our kicking of the tires of your internal controls. A fourth element, which is unique to Oregon, is that Oregon, the state Secretary of State Audits Division, has put out additional requirements for audits of Oregon municipal corporations. So they require us to do some compliance testing. There's about 7 or 8 areas of laws. The primary ones include local budget law and public procurement. So we've got to look at your processes of the adoption of a budget, all the process that leads up, the public hearings, the minutes you keep, and then the public hearing, the adoption process. And then also after it's adopted, did you meet any requirements in administering the budget, any supplemental budgets, that sort of thing? Public purchasing or procurement is a big area. So we'll sample contracts. We'll look at how well you met not only state laws, but your own policies on purchasing of goods and services. Other areas include where you deposit your money, the types of investments. That's all regulated by the state so that you aren't out there doing some risky investing. Risk management or insurance to reduce the risk of loss at the city, those sorts of things. And then we issue a report, and we'll talk about that here in a few minutes. Another area, the city has been pretty prolific in writing for grants to fund your activities. So you get federal financial assistance. When you receive federal monies, there's additional audit requirements that you need to meet. And so our audit is designed to meet the additional requirements and do some compliance testing on how well you're able to administer those federal programs. And we'll talk this year that audit is actually delayed and we're not ready to issue our reports. And again, we'll talk about that. And then another very important phase, and the last one I'll mention, is really just the communication process. We do that a number of ways. Clearly you have an internal auditor that requires that we work with to work through our audit plan. We have management that we have to work with. And then finally, coming before you and sharing the results is a very important process or part of the audit process. Okay, go ahead. Next slide. And with that, I'd like to ask Keith to step in and, well, actually, I'll just do one more slide and then I'll ask Keith to step in. This slide is really just to highlight the fact that there are a number of separate legal entities that we audit as part of our contract with the city. So clearly there's the city of Portland itself, But you have these other legal entities. Prosper Portland is kind of that urban renewal agency arm of the city. And so our work includes an audit of a separate financial statement that they issue, the fire, police, disability, and retirement plan. Although it gets included in the city's financials, it is audited separately and issues a separate set of financial statements. And then also you have this Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, which is a component unit of the city, and we do a separate audit of that. And so a number of different pieces come together in order to complete our audit of the city's financial statements. Go ahead. So now I'll turn it over to Keith, and maybe you could share with us a little bit of our audit process and some of the areas that we looked at.
Perfect. Thanks, Jim. Hopefully everyone can hear me okay. As Jim mentioned, you know, this slide gives you a little more insight into our audit process. You know, how do we get to this point where we're issuing opinions to say that we believe the financial statements are free of material misstatement? And really, it kind of starts back with our initial risk assessment process. Every single year, we talk as a team, after kind of having a kickoff meeting with management to talk about current year operations, after we've read through the meeting minutes from throughout the year, to get an idea of what are those significant transactions, what's new in the current year, where could there be additional risks that we need to consider. So it really starts with that fresh look every single year to say, where are the significant risks when we think about a financial statement audit of the city, and where do we need to spend the bulk of our time? And then we go into this process of designing our audit procedures individually for each transaction class and each balance. And we can use a number of different procedures to be able to get us to the point where we can say we believe the financial statements are fair and accurate. And so we typically use a combination of these three sets of procedures that we have listed on here. Jim mentioned how we're doing an evaluation of internal controls as well. That's a very big piece of what we do, and it also feeds into the risk assessment process. We really want to understand for all the key transaction cycles, whether it's the disbursements and getting cash out the door, whether it's cash receiving, whether it's utility billing, payroll, all these different areas, we're digging in, we're getting an understanding of how the city processes transactions and what are those key control points, what are those checks and balances along the way to make sure that the city can feel comfortable that it's processing its transactions appropriately, correctly, and able to prevent any significant errors from occurring and running through the system. So that's a very key point in our process. And if we're finding significant issues in that process, that's gonna change our audit approach, as we may need to do more substantive procedures or more analytical procedures to be able to get a level of comfort over the accuracy of the ending balances. So that's really kind of the first part, is that internal control piece. And we really separate that out from what we call our final field work when we're looking at ending balances and ending transactions and performing kind of some of those substantive procedures. And Jim mentioned this as well, where we're spending a lot of time sending confirmations out to third parties, whether that's your debt holders, the financial institutions, whether that's sampling and looking at certain transactions, tracing those back to source documentation. Looking at invoices, contracts, and agreements. Did the city record those accurately at the right amount in the right period? Were they classified appropriately? If you think of something like a capital asset, recording something as a capital asset versus an expense, those types of things that we're looking at. And then we're also reaching out to internal legal counsel as well, city attorneys, getting an idea of, is there anything else out there in terms of a loss contingency or some type of accrual that would need to be considered or disclosed in the financial statements. So that's another area we're spending a lot of time looking at. And then we also do our analytical procedures. And this is really where we're taking that step back approach and looking at the overall transactions for the year and saying, does this make sense based on everything we know that occurred at the city during the year? For the significant transactions that we've read through in the minutes, for things that we've heard from management, things that we've uncovered in other audit procedures, are we seeing that those are filtering down into the actual financial records? And are we able to kind of put together a predictive analytic that can get us to a point that's similar to what the actual results were that the city recorded? So that's kind of a 30,000 foot view to see, is there anything that seems off balance that we need to dig down into deeper? So that's a very effective procedure as well. go ahead and advance the slides from there. And then we also wanted to just take a minute to talk a little bit about how our audit was different this year. Of course, we did perform the audit completely in a remote environment this year. This is the first time that we've really had to do that. Now, last year, we got some experience in that regard as we were working from our office as the city was located, you know, throughout the city in different locations, and we could go and visit some of those, but we weren't set up on site at any of the city offices. So we got some experience there, but this year, you know, we weren't going on site at all. Everything was done completely remotely. All the documentation was exchanged remotely. So we really had to leverage the technology tools available. And I keep saying, you know, if we had done this process, if we had gone through this pandemic and tried to go through an audit process, you know, 5 years or definitely 10 years ago, it would be, I think, a much different situation, a much more challenging situation than what we're going through right now because of the technology tools that we were able to leverage, because of the digitized records that the city has available to us. You know, there's not huge stacks of paper and things like that that we're getting when we're performing the audit anymore. So these electronic means of exchanging documents really helped us out in that process. We also changed up our risk assessment. Of course, I mentioned that's a key piece of us setting our audit plan. And of course, the remote work environment was a huge piece of that. We wanted to understand what was the impacts, if any, to the internal controls in place. So we were selecting transactions both before and after the onset of the pandemic in the remote work environment to see if we were seeing a lack of internal controls where maybe they were there in the past. Are we seeing controls that were more delayed in happening this year compared to years past? That was another important piece of our risk assessment process this year. We also used a lot of technology such as the, you know, something like this, like Zoom or we use WebEx for a lot of what we call our walkthrough and interview processes with various city staff. You know, we can still do screen sharing and be able to kind of look on screen. You know, in the past, we'd be there on site looking over someone's shoulder as they were processing a transaction and having them walk us through the different control points. In this case, we still have that technology and have the ability to share screens to be able to get that same result. So that's very effective. And then another key piece that you might be interested in is, you know, just the additional disclosures that were added to the financial statements this year. In that CAFR document, you're going to see much more robust disclosures surrounding the impacts of the pandemic and other things going on over the course of the year. And that was a key piece for us to focus in on and making sure as part of our risk assessment process and looking for that level of transparency in there to alert the user or the reader of the financial statements as to the impacts and the level of uncertainties out there right now of future impacts from the pandemic as well. So those are included within the financial statements this year. Go ahead and advance the slide. So you may be interested in, well, what was the final result of our audit reports? And as Jim mentioned and went through each one of these individually and what they really mean, the purpose here is to really give you an idea of what are we saying in those in the current year based on the results of our audit process. So for our initial report over the accuracy and fairness of the financial statements and the records and disclosures included in there, you'll notice that we give an unmodified, which is our audit speak, for a clean opinion on the financial statements. The records, the presentation in there is reported fairly and accurately based on the testing and the audit evidence that we gained throughout the year. The report on government auditing standards, and this is the one that Jim mentioned, where we talk about if there were any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in internal controls. And those are the types of things where if you know, a lack of internal controls, a lack of checks and balances, where, you know, we believe that there's a hole in internal controls where something could slip through the cracks and not be identified, those would be noted in that report. And I'm happy to say this year that we didn't have any findings in that regard. There were no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses noted during our evaluation of internal controls. So good news there as well. Our report on compliance with certain Oregon minimum audit standards, Jim alluded to the testing we do over compliance with Oregon local budget law, as well as compliance with some of the state procurement standards as well, and a number of other areas that we look at. We didn't have any compliance findings during that testing process in the current year. So we just pause and think about those three reports and the results this year. that's a pretty tremendous outcome, especially given the situation that we're in currently, doing this all remotely and being able to get kind of get to this point and hit all the deadlines that were initially set out at the start of the year without any delay in final issuance. So very good news there. Jim did mention our single audit report. That's a report on compliance with certain federal guidance requirements over federal financial assistance. And this is something that is delayed right now. And the reason for that is the guidance over the CARES Act. We don't have federal guidance that's been released yet. That tells us as auditors exactly what are those compliance requirements that they care about, that they want us to audit. And how do we need to focus in and do that portion of the audit? So that is still outstanding at this point. Our latest information is that that may be coming later in December, at which time we'll move forward with completing those audit procedures, specifically over the CARES Act grant funding over the start of 2021. So that is still hanging out there, but that did not hold up the issuance of the CAFR report. Go ahead and advance the slide.
You know, one thing you might mention, or we might mention, Keith, there is that single audit or that audit in our reports associated with testing your federal grants, that normally is not due until March or the end of March. So even though it's not done yet, and we would normally be completed with that work, just like we're completed with the financial audit in prior years, it's still timely. It's just we're not able to do it as quickly as we have in the past. So we're hopeful the guidance comes out, we'll finish that work, and you'll still be issuing reports and able to complete your filing of that with the federal government no later than the end of March, which will still be considered timely. Go ahead, Keith.
Perfect. Thanks for that, Jim. This next section is to focus in on the separate deliverable that we issue called our communication to those charged with governance. And this is a letter that's required by our professional audit standards as part of every audit that we do. And this comes out at the end of the audit process to let the governing body of the organization kind of know about certain things about how the audit went, whether we ran into any issues in terms of, say, something like a scope limitation where we were asking for certain documents and they weren't provided to us. You know, that would go back to this bullet point on whether we had any difficulties in performing the audit. It talks about if there's any significant changes in accounting policies. And this would be something if there's a significant new standard issued by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board that could really impact the presentation, the look and feel of your CAFR document. And that's something that we'd want to highlight and bring to your attention. And fortunately this year, with the pandemic and everything going on, GASB realized that a lot of their new standards, everyone would need a little bit more time to implement some of the new ones that they had put out there. So that has basically delayed the effective dates for a lot of new standards. And really this means that in the current year, you didn't run into a lot of changes in your financial statements and your reporting compared to previous years. Now, the two main things I wanted to focus in on that you'll see in the letter, we always talk about if there's any audit adjustments. And what that would be is once we started our audit process, once management was done with their year-end reconciliations and closing the books and started providing documentation to us to audit, if we were noting any errors in the testing that we were doing, if we were noting transactions weren't recorded at the right amount or in the right period or classified appropriately, or in line with the Governmental Accounting Standards guidance, those are the types of things that could trigger an audit adjustment that we would want to report out as something that was adjusted to the initial information that was provided to us and then reflected in the final CAFR that was issued. Through the testing that we've done this year, we didn't have any material audit adjustments noted in that process. So very clean records, information that was provided to us was right in line with the source documentation that we were able to match it up with. And given the environment that we're in, you know, we didn't see any delays or significant issues with internal controls as well. And that goes down to the bullet point about, did we have any observations or recommendations that came out of that process that's reported in this communication to those charged with governance? And the answer there again is no. We didn't have those items that were a significant deficiency or material weakness in internal controls, which is very good news considering where we're at right now and trying to still do all these controls in a remote environment. So very good news there. We do have some recommendations that we provide more on along the lines of a best practice recommendation that we work through with management each year as they come up, but again, none that rise to a level of a significant deficiency or material weakness. So good news there. Okay, go ahead and advance the slide, and I think I'm going to turn it back to Jim to
yeah, just a few more comments, and then definitely want to make sure you have an opportunity to ask us any questions. But you know, one thing I think about, we're here reporting on our audit of that comprehensive annual financial report, that beast of a document. I don't know what the page count is, but it's got to be close to 400 pages. And I realize that when it may not be the first document that you pull off the shelf as an elected official, when you're trying to fulfill your duties as a city council member, but I hope that you understand that it is the financial scorecard. How well is the city doing under your leadership? Are you better off? Are you worse off? How well is the financial situation of the city faring as a result of all the initiatives that are important to you, the city goals, and the administration of your leadership? So I'm hopeful that you take advantage of Michelle and her team in learning or hearing about what that scorecard tells you. It's not the easiest document to read and understand. Another thing is the accuracy of that document is very important to other key stakeholders. The city has over $3 billion of debt outstanding. Most of those are municipal bonds. And a very key user of your financial statements are those folks that buy and sell those bonds. That financing is so important to you to fund the various capital projects of the city, the infrastructure, and so forth. And so being able to tap into that financing vehicle is critical to the city. This document, this annual comprehensive report, is one of the key pieces of information all of those stakeholders look to when they're doing risk assessments of the city, determining if they're going to buy your bonds. And that risk assessment also informs them what kind of an interest rate that they want, what interest rate compensates them for their perceived risk in the city's ability to make those payments. And another thing we don't think about, that document, or I should say, when we issue a bond, we were very focused on all of the work that goes into issuing a bond, getting the proceeds, and beginning to do the work. We don't often think about the fact that those bonds are bought and sold in secondary markets. And there are thousands of financial advisors out there that work with banks, investment houses, and so forth that package individual investment portfolios. And they're very interested in the financial condition of the city. And that comprehensive annual financial report is, again, one of the key pieces of information that they look to answer their questions that helps them determine whether they're going to buy and sell those bonds or recommend putting them in portfolios for their clients or themselves. So a very important document. Another element that goes into that risk assessment is the caliber and quality of your finance staff. And I've just been amazed at how well the city has been able to hire some highly talented and capable individuals. When Michelle was hired, Michelle Kirby, we've gotten to know her very well. And wow, she's just done a phenomenal job for the city. We've been very happy in working with Michelle and what she brought to the table. Key in helping the city meet this shortened timeline to get your financials done and the audit issued. Ron Vaught is also a key member of your finance team. Ron's been with the city for quite a while, and he's just a wealth of experience and knowledge. And I'm very pleased that he's willing to share that with his fellow finance professionals across the state. He's very involved in the governmental organizations in Oregon, and also the Oregon Society of CPAs. So very key member. Ashley Tuttle came along. I don't know exactly when she started with the city or when she entered her current role on the finance team, but she's a key person putting this annual document together, and she's done a phenomenal job in that role. And so we'd really like to acknowledge the efforts of Ashley. And of course, you've got a number of other players across the city, too many to mention, but three key individuals that certainly we have had the pleasure of working with, and just want to acknowledge that. Mary Hull Caballero and Kari Guy, you know, they manage our contract, and very professional. Very much appreciate that you have this independent acquisition of your external auditor and someone managing our contract in her office, and Kari in particular in managing our contract, just a great person to work with and helping facilitate the work that we need to do. So anyway, want to acknowledge all of that and make sure that we turn it over and provide some opportunity for comments and to ask us any questions that you may have.
Very good, colleagues. Any questions? I'll just ask, maybe I'll start this off and just ask some of the usual questions that I ask. Obviously, the scope of the audit, you identified that right up front, Jim, and I take it that that is your standard scope. There was nothing that changed with regard to the scope of that audit?
Yeah, I would say, and Keith kind of hit on it, you know, every year we do a kind of this risk assessment that Keith talked about. So there may be elements of the city that we look at differently or in more depth than we might see another city in Oregon or a county or TriMet or the port. But you're right. We didn't. The only thing unique to the city would be the COVID-19 for this year. Obviously, we had to work in this remote environment, but for the city, you know, you incurred some additional expenses. You got additional funding through the CARES Act. There's an impact to the city from all of this, from COVID-19 and your response to it. So we had a little bit of a difference in our audit work centered around how well the city disclosed your challenges. The situation you faced in the financial statements. So that would probably be a little bit unique. I wouldn't call it a scope change in the fact that, hey, we found a problem, but that was an area of enhanced risk that we felt was deserving of an audit response. So a little bit additional work in that area. Finally, I'd say, you know, you've been pretty, well, I don't want to say aggressive, but you have been out working on homelessness and issuing bonds to support some of your efforts to address that. Obviously Metro, one of our clients, issued quite a bit of bonds. I would say we've had a little bit more focus on auditing the bond activity, and some of these new activities around your new initiatives are fairly new, like trying to address homelessness. So maybe a little bit of effort there that we would not have done, say, a few years ago. So just a couple areas maybe in response to your question.
That's helpful. And I take it you were provided all the information that you asked for. Was there any information you asked for that either was not provided or could not be provided?
No. I would say that obviously there are going to be some challenges trying to transfer information remotely. Also, with the changing work schedules of individuals that were impacted differently with the virus, I would say there might have been some issues in timeliness of getting information, but we ultimately always got it. And not only did we get it, but we were still able to meet the timelines that were laid out that got us to help the city issue the statements by the end of October. So we worked around, and none of those rose to a level that we feel we would need to bring to your attention in terms of audit challenges.
All right. Yeah, and that would be expected. And I take it there were no restrictions placed on you by the organization or by anybody else in terms of what you were looking at?
Yeah, absolutely not. One of the things we appreciate about your finance team is that they're pretty open with us on, so not only do we get good responses to our questions, but they're proactive. There have been a number of times that they reached out to us throughout the year to tell us about challenges, maybe something they're not quite sure how to account for, or maybe just want confirmation on what they need to do. So I would say they're very proactive. So never have we felt like, hey, they're giving us a wishy-washy response, or it's complete, or so we did not experience anything like that.
Very good. And one last question. I assume that there were no serious or material concerns with the corporate control environment.
I'm sorry, the corporate control?
The control environment. So in terms of the way we control the information, the way the information is protected, were there any issues that you identified there?
Yeah, absolutely not. And Keith kind of mentioned the results there. So obviously we have to take your all of the balances that show up on your balance sheet, all those key balances, and then also consider the transaction cycles that you have. And then once we have that all down and listed, now we have to look at those unique internal controls that help you to get the numbers right in all of those areas. And there can be a number of internal controls in each of those areas. So we look at a lot of internal controls, and none of what we found rose to a level that requires reporting to you in writing. So another way of saying it is you've got some pretty good controls in place. They're operating effectively, and our testing supported that they're designed correctly and operating effectively.
All right, and Commissioner Hardesty, if you'll bear with me for 1 minute, that this raises two additional questions in my mind. The first is, since you've come back year after year, have you found that the organization is responsive to recommendations or changes that you've proposed?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've had findings in the past, if you want to call it that. So internal control weaknesses, for example, we've had compliance findings on federal grants in the past, or some non-compliance with State of Oregon. We have provided suggestions, and management's very open to receiving our suggestions, best practice recommendations. I would like to believe that as a result of that, that's how you get to a clean opinion and no findings. In addition to just having some really smart people and already knowing what they need to do, I think our relationship with city finance staff is strong enough to where they appreciate our comments and have implemented suggestions and look at the results.
Right. And this really is my last one. Since you mentioned the issuance of bonds, and I realize when we issue bonds, they're rated at that time by independent rating agencies, and they look at the debt load and whatnot. Did you look at that as part of the scope of this audit? Did you look at our debt structure?
You know, we don't look at it in the sense of, is this the most effective or efficient? We do look at it from a couple angles. One is that you have compliance requirements. When you issue bonds, there's a number of things that you need to do in order to satisfy not only the bondholder, but also there's a federal process in a repository for you to put information so that folks wanting to do research on the city have access. They can look at any bond issuance, they have access to your audit report, and they have access to other information. We're very focused on whether you're meeting those compliance requirements, because if you were to fail to meet compliance requirements, that could impact your ability to issue the next bond, or it could impact the risk rating that someone would associate.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about any of that. And I understand that from the issuance perspective. I just wanted to see if there was anything you looked at specifically. It sounds like you just make sure we check the boxes.
Right. I mean, it's really
you don't make a value judgment.
It's not a value judgment. You have other alternatives. I mean, ultimately, it'd be great if you could finance your projects without issuing debt. But our audit isn't focused at, are you optimizing all the possible ways that you can finance a project? We would be reporting to you if it appeared that you'd gone beyond a point that is that you have the ability to make payments. We would probably have some reporting to you if it looked like you're in some risk of not being able to meet your payments.
I want my money back if you didn't.
And and the last thing I would say about that, Mayor, is that you do have a debt finance team of some pretty smart folks that and they do look at, and I think are informative to you when it looks like, hey, you maybe get close to where we're incurring some higher risk in our ability to repay. You've got some pretty sharp folks there that hopefully you're able to tap into to answer some of those questions.
And we do. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Next up, Commissioner Hardesty had some questions. Commissioner, thanks for your patience.
No worry, Mayor. Thank you. And actually, because you and I have done this a couple of times, I was pretty sure you were going to ask if we still had our AAA bond rating, because I know how you'd like to put that on the record. So I was waiting for you to ask that question. So I will ask that question, Jim. Is the City of Portland still have a AAA bond rating?
You know, I don't have it committed to memory. You still have an excellent bond rating, and it is disclosed in the management discussion and analysis section of that CAFR. So
I actually do have it in front of me, and as far as I can see, nothing's changed between last year and this year as far as our bond rating status is. And by the way, Jim, it is 427 pages, just in case you're wondering. And I want to thank you, Keith. You brought up the topic that I was really interested in, which is really around the CARES Act dollars and how they will be evaluated to ensure that we have met our federal obligations. And I think I heard you say that they have not issued guidance yet about how they're going to account for those dollars. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's correct. That's the one piece that we are waiting on. We would have normally had this portion of the audit done by now, and we have audited some of the federal programs already other than the CARES Act funding, but that's the piece that we do not have federal guidance that tells us what they care about, what they want us to audit. So that's what we're waiting on.
And maybe you can answer this question, Keith. Is it December 31st is still the deadline for expending all the CARES Act dollars? Is that accurate?
That piece, I don't know if I know that off the top of my head. Jim, do you know?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of questions about that. And what does it mean to expend the dollars? Initially, there was some thought that you actually had to cut the check and send it out the door by the 31st. I believe there have been some clarifications that as long as you incur the expense by December 31, and it's paid in your normal payable cycle, so there are some expenses which you don't necessarily have to send cash out the door, but you need to incur the expense prior to December 31. So yes, that is my understanding. One thing I would say, Commissioner Hardesty, especially on the CARES Act, I know the city got a very nice allotment of the one particular pot, the Coronavirus Relief Fund, so CRF dollars. One thing I would say is that the city reached out. We had a number of discussions with your grants management team and with Michelle and her team because there wasn't a lot of guidance on how you could spend that money. Folks were kind of in the dark for a while. And so I'm glad that we were able to be a little bit of a facilitator for our clients here in Oregon and connect people up. So at least we could facilitate to the extent we could, sharing of information. Your crew was very proactive to reach out to get information. And what I can say about it is, in our initial discussions with your grants management folks, they appeared to be taking a very conservative approach in how the money was to be spent. Some of our clients were pushing the envelope, which kind of makes us a little nervous. We didn't get that sense from talking to your folks there at the city.
Well, I just want to thank you again. Really excellent work. I appreciate the extreme detail under which this document provides any kind of information anybody wants at any time about the financial health of the city of Portland. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Anybody else have any thoughts, questions? All right. Thank you. Great presentation. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I was hoping Bridget or Matt might be on the call, and I don't see him, but I did a quick Google search, and as of May 20, Moody's still had us at AAA.
Mayor, you're stealing my thunder. That's
I'm sorry.
Coming
sorry,
up.
Michelle, go ahead. Forget everything I just said.
No. Are we ready for the next item?
Yeah, you want.
Okay. Ron and Ashley, would you...
Oh, wait, Commissioner Ryan just stuck his hand up. Let's okay. Before I get to you, Commissioner Ryan, go ahead, please.
Actually, it's fine, Mayor. I'd love to hear from Michelle Kirby, and then I'll say something at the
Perfect.
End.
Perfect. Michelle, you're up. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to share my screen with you. And I want to say good afternoon to Mayor and members of the City Council. For the record, my name is Michelle Kirby with pronouns she, her, and I'm the city's Chief Financial Officer and the Director of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. Joining me today are my colleagues, Ashley Tuttle, Accounting Supervisor, and Ron Vaught, City Controller. The award-winning team that was discussed by Mr. Lanzarotta. And before we move on, I do want to thank Jim Lanzarotta for his years of service as our audit partner. I've worked with many auditors over my career, and I wouldn't necessarily speak super kindly about all of them, but he's been a real pleasure to work with, professional and collegial, and it's been a pleasure. So thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
We are here today to present the city's comprehensive annual financial report. So we're the team that puts it together, and then Moss Adams audits it. We're going to discuss the preparation of the report, the highlights and financial trends for the city as a whole, and then also for our five major funds. We'll be presenting to you additional information about the city's long-term fiscal health. And now I'm going to turn it over to Ashley.
Thank you, Michelle. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the City Council. My name is Ashley Tuttle, and I'm the Accounting Supervisor for the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. So copies of the CAFR are currently being printed and will be delivered to each one of your offices in the following weeks. The preparation of the annual CAFR is an extensive project, which requires a group effort to make it a success. Involvement is needed from all of the city's bureaus, the city auditor's office, as well as our independent auditors, Moss Adams, to ensure that the timely and successful completion of the report. The accounting division of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services is responsible for preparing the CAFR, ensuring its accuracy, and working with the auditors throughout the process. The division team members have tuned in today, and so I'd like to take a moment to thank them for their hard work and their dedication to the success of this report. Next slide. So this is the third year in a row that the city's CAFR has been published on October 30th, which is just 4 months from the end of the fiscal year. In a normal year, this is a huge push to get it done in 4 months. This year, it was an amazing feat. Because as everyone is aware, this year brought so many challenges to our daily lives, but also to the CAFR. So we were working around adjusting to a new remote environment for everyone. working around furloughs for a majority of the city's staff, and it brought challenges that most of us had never faced during this CAFR reporting season. However, it was still very important for us to get this report out on our normal deadline. And you may be asking why. So first of all, timeliness is one of the major objectives of financial reporting because it ensures that the information is relevant and useful for decision-making right now. And it's especially important this year because the financial situation is changing rapidly all around us. And in order for the city to be able to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic and other critical matters, it's really important that the financial information be readily available. And it also establishes the city as a national leader in providing timely financial information to our community, but also to other interested users of the CAFR. In addition, preparing the CAFR in less time allows the accounting division time to focus on some of the other reporting initiatives that we have. Next slide. So now we'll discuss some highlights of the fiscal year 2019-20 CAFR. So the good news, as you've already heard, is that our external auditors gave the city an unmodified opinion and found no material weaknesses in the city's accounting processes. In addition, the CAFR complies with state law and generally accepted accounting principles. We received the Government Finance Officers Association Award for Excellence in Financial Reporting for the 39th consecutive year. And the city's bond rating, as some have already asked about, is still for unlimited tax general obligation bonds, is still rated a AAA, which Michelle Kirby will discuss later on in this presentation. So now I will turn the presentation over to Ron Vaught, City Controller, for a look at some of financial trends.
Thank you, Ashley. Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council members. For the record, my name is Ron Vaught. I am the Controller for the City of Portland. We are here to provide a brief overview of the city's finances as of June 30th, 2020. A more detailed analysis can be found in the Management Discussion and Analysis section of the CAFR. There are dozens of funds that make up the city. The city as a whole is represented in the government-wide financial statements, and we will talk about those briefly. Then we will be talking about the city's five major funds, which are individually make up the bulk of that total. Next slide. The government-wide net position, which is shown here, is our assets less our liabilities, which can also be thought of as what we own less what we owe. The city's capital assets increased by $250 million to $7.2 billion, and total assets now total $9.7 billion. It is positive that capital assets overall increased, but our transportation assets depreciated at a faster rate than they were replaced and fell by $145 million. The assets are offset by a variety of liabilities. One big increase to liabilities in fiscal year 20 was that our FPD&R pension liability increased by $0.8 billion to $4.5 billion. Although this appears to be a significant problem, our actuaries have determined that the tax levy that pays this liability will be sufficient to satisfy that obligation. The primary reason FPD&R liability increase was Federal Reserve lowered interest rates, which then lowered rates for debt. Our outstanding bonds dropped slightly to $3.2 billion. And our PERS pension liability increased to $0.7 billion. Paying for our share of the PERS liability will be an ongoing issue and will result in continued higher contribution rates. Next slide. Citywide net position increased at a slower pace in fiscal year 20, as can be seen on the slide. The COVID-19 pandemic played a significant role in the slowing of growth.
The slide didn't change.
Ah.
Yes, it did.
There it is.
Well, yeah, that one's been up. Oh, okay, now it changed.
There were positive areas such as growth in property and clean energy tax revenues, which are more stable revenue streams. That growth was offset by reductions in revenue streams that were more sensitive to COVID-19 pandemic, such as gas and lodging taxes, state shared revenues, charges for services that we provide to outside parties, such as recreation activities. The net result was that total revenues of $2.3 billion were $41 million lower than in fiscal year 19. Expenses were also $2.3 billion, which exceeded spending in fiscal year 19 by $129 million, due primarily to increased pension expense. Other significant increases were in public safety, community development, and utility operations. Next slide. Okay, we got that one. Here we see the general fund, which is our largest of our governmental funds. The impact of the change in fund balance can be seen in this chart, which shows the fund balances in the general fund and the general reserve fund. In fiscal year 20, the reserve fund balance fell as a result of a planned move of $7 million in Fire Bureau Capital Reserves to the new Fire Bureau Capital Project Fund. The general fund balance fell $17 million in fiscal year 20 compared to an increase in fund balance of $29 million in the prior year. General fund revenues did increase $16 million to $849 million, due primarily to increases in business licenses and taxes. But the rate of increase was lower than in the past few years. We were very lucky that the city had been having an exceptional year from a revenue perspective up through the onset of the COVID-19 crisis, which allowed us to collect $12 million more in revenues than we had estimated in the budget. Expenditures increased by $43 million over the prior year to $794 million. The biggest increases in expenditures came in the areas of public safety and housing, in part due to resource demands caused by COVID-19. Next slide. Our next major fund is transportation. COVID-19 did have a significant impact on transportation revenues, and the fund ended the year with revenues falling $23 million to $232 million, which represents a 9% loss over the prior year. Parking revenue, charges for services, gas tax, and state shared revenues all came in below the levels that they were at in that fiscal year 19. Transportation spending increased by $27 million to $267 million. That represents an 11% increase in spending. While fund balance rose by $44 million in fiscal year 19, it fell $23 million this year. Next slide. Next is the grants fund. The city's spending in the grants fund increased by $20 million. Since there is often a lag between spending money and recognizing the corresponding revenue, this fund always has a negative fund balance. Half of the increase in spending relates to increases in transportation infrastructure spending. The rest related to FEMA and CARES spending related to COVID-19. Next slide. And these are our final two major funds, which are the city's utilities funds. And they both continue the trend of increasing their net positions. BES's revenues rose $0.5 million to $381 million, while expenses rose $15 million to $222 million. Water revenues rose $3 million to $206 million. Expenses rose $9 million to $134 million. Although revenues didn't increase nearly as fast as expenses, revenues continued to exceed expenses, and the net position in these two funds continued to increase. Capital assets increased by $222 million in fiscal year 20, reflecting continued investment in our utility infrastructure. And now I'll let Michelle close out with the last few slides.
Thank you, Ron. And as we've already heard, the news that the city's unlimited tax general obligation debt remains rated AAA by Moody's Investor Service, and this was affirmed this past May. It's really important to note that only 8% of government municipalities have a AAA credit rating, which is the highest rating, and which the city of Portland has held for many years. This is important in that it allows us to borrow at a lower interest rate, much like your personal credit rating affects the interest you might pay on a home mortgage. And in fact, having the highest credit rating literally saves us millions of dollars in interest costs. And it also provides assurance to investors that the city is financially stable. And this year it is especially notable that our credit rating was affirmed AAA with a stable outlook in May. As when you think back to May, there was much financial uncertainty at that time. And so you can see here the considerations that Moody's cited in the report. And our strengths are essentially a reflection of our strong policies and our demonstrated fiscal controls. As for the challenges, although our pension liabilities are elevated compared to peers, this is mitigated by the property tax, the dedicated property tax levy for the FPDR pensions. And although our reserves may be lower than many similarly rated peers, the level of our reserves are considered adequate given the stable revenue structure of our primary revenues. And in discussing the ratings outlook, the Moody's report says the following, and I'm going to quote, "Stable outlook reflects our expectation that the city will maintain largely stable fund balances through economic uncertainty by reducing expenses when needed while still maintaining sufficient service delivery. We expect economic conditions will continue to gradually improve." And so to summarize our presentation points, the city CAFR at June 30, 2020 complies with all required accounting standards and received a clean audit opinion from Moss Adams. The CAFR represents a financial snapshot at a point in time. And while the city's total net position at June 30th increased over the prior year, due in part to the stability of our largest revenue streams, we must be mindful that several revenue streams have been negatively impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's this economic uncertainty that's going to require us to continue to make prudent cuts in expenses in order to bridge the gap to better economic times. Our current credit ratings are reflective of our financial strength, strong policies, fiscal controls. We must stay the course to ensure the city's financial health remains strong into the future. Long-term financial stability requires a long-term focus. We are accountable to the community in the use of public dollars, and we must use our resources wisely to ensure we can meet our current and future needs. And that's our presentation for today. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Well, I just want to acknowledge again your terrific work over 39 years. That's impressive. I think next year we're going to have a cake or something.
I wasn't here for all 39
years. No, I know that. I know that. Commissioner Ryan, you've been waiting patiently.
Well, it was worth it. I just want to start off by acknowledging Director Kirby. I've been looking at audit statements, mostly in the nonprofit sector, for a long time. I've never seen one that didn't have any, that was clean with no findings. That I'm almost in shock, and I want to dig and find something. But anyway, congratulations. That's very impressive. I do have a question for you, because you know we're in a rearview mirror, and we only had really one quarter of last fiscal year that had the impacts of COVID. So, and you made some statements, which I appreciated, about how we need to be disciplined going forward. Was some of that based on what you saw in the last quarter of last fiscal year that allowed you to make such a clear, crisp statement?
Yes, thank you. And actually, Commissioner Ryan, you reminded me of such when we had our new commissioner meeting a few weeks ago, that we need to be mindful that although our property taxes and our business license taxes are our largest revenue streams overall, and they were stable, parks revenues and transportation revenues were really hit pretty hard. And so, as Ron said, we're lucky that there was only 3 months of that in the current financial statements. And we have implemented monthly monitoring reports. And so we are keeping close tabs on the revenue streams and the expenses so that we don't want to have to wait till next year to be finding situations that need immediately to be addressed.
And I also just want to thank you. That was really helpful. I also want to acknowledge the quick turnaround. I just know in organizations that I've run, in the nonprofit sector at least, it's really a big lift to have an audit completed at this time. So I know that Jim brought that up, and anyway, I'm really impressed with how clean and efficient this was. And I look forward to more conversations as we're mindful of how we have to plan with the big word uncertainty going forward. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And Jim, I hardly knew you, but clearly everyone's impressed, and you will be missed. So thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any further questions or discussion? And does that complete then the presentations for both of those items, 939 and 940, Madam Auditor?
Yes, that completes both parts.
Okay. So colleagues, if there are no further questions or discussions, I'll entertain a motion to accept the report, item 939.
So moved.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. And same for 940. Can I get a motion, please, to accept the report?
So moved.
Motion and a second for that. On 939, any further discussion? Keelan, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Well, Jim, I have benefited from your reports for the last 12 years, and it's interesting that you and I are both going off to new adventures at the same time. So thank you very much. You've made things interesting. You've always made them very clear, and that's not easy to do when there's a 400-page report. And so for that alone, I thank you, let alone for the finding. I was pleased to hear Commissioner Ryan being astonished that other audits rarely turn up a completely clean sheet. And I know that Michelle and her team work really hard to make sure that happens, as do all of the Bureau staff in giving you the information that you need in order to make that assessment. So great team effort. I'm appreciative that it's coming to council earlier than sometimes happens. And I look forward to what you continue to do to make things like audits clear and understandable to the general public. Aye.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Very nice.
Ryan.
Yes. I just want to say thanks again to Madam Auditor, to Director Kirby, both your teams, and to our partners at Moss Adams. Aye.
Hardesty.
I just want to put on a record that this CAF that you guys have been talking about is the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. You know, the acronyms at the city drive me a bit batty sometimes, and I just think about how it feels when you're out in the audience wondering what the heck we're talking about. I think the data was really good in letting the public know what we were talking about, but wanted to make sure that was on the record. I also want to also appreciate all the hard work that I know went into this, especially the first year of doing it all electronically. I just can't imagine how many new gray hairs people acquired and how many they pulled out of their head while they were trying to get there. So the work is very much appreciated. Jim, I want to put a challenge to your firm. We love working with you, and the city is committed to equity and opportunities. So I hope within your organization, as you transition out, we think about what up and coming financial wizard and your firm that you will put on the team for the city of Portland. We really like to walk out talk and every opportunity that we get. So your help in helping us make sure that we continue to be an equitable contracting opportunity would be greatly appreciated. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Appreciate that. We are very serious about our inclusion, diversity, and equity programs. And so that's a big focus for us. We're fortunate to have quite a few diverse folks on our team. And we're very fortunate to have a pretty high number of female partners compared to CPA firms across the nation. So anyway, we are working very hard on our own internal programs. And so I'm very positive that you will see diverse teams, and we recognize the importance of that, especially in our industry group. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And just know we're working on ours too. So nobody's got it figured out yet. Thank you so much.
Wheeler.
Jim, congratulations and best to you in the years ahead. Thank you for your tremendous service. Thanks to everybody. Great work to everybody on the team. Well done. Thank you, Madam Auditor. I vote aye. The report is accepted. 9:40, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
I love the CAFR. Thank you. We have a great team who puts this together. And for people who are true City Hall watchers, I encourage you to look it up online. It'll keep you entertained for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours on end. I vote aye. Thank you. The report is accepted. We will now move to a different field here. This is item 941, time certain, please.
Adopt the River Plan South Reach, amend the comprehensive plan and comprehensive plan map, the Willamette Greenway Plan, Title 33, and the zoning map. Repeal the McAdam Corridor Design Guidelines and adopt the Willamette River Greenway Inventory and the Central City Natural and Scenic Inventories as supporting documents.
Very good. First, a word about today's proceedings from our city attorney.
Mayor, this is Lindley. I'm here for the city attorney's office. I think the only thing I was going to do is read the general announcements. And if Lori did that already, we don't need to do that.
Then forget it. We already did it. All right. So we're back today to talk about the River Plan South Reach and the Willamette Greenway Inventory. Commissioner Hardesty, I'll start off by turning this over to you for any opening comments you may have.
Thank you, Mayor. Colleagues, as you will recall, we held a public hearing on the River Plan / South Reach and the Willamette River Greenway Inventory on November 4th. And today, we will be discussing potential amendments. I will turn it over to Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff to walk us through the agenda for the day, a summary of testimony received, and an overview of the amendment that was filed in advance of our session today. Sally, are you taking it away?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, Mayor and Commissioners. Pleased to be here with you again today. My name is Sally Edmonds, and with me today in this Zoom room are Jeff Cottle, Project Manager, and Cassie Ballou from our Urban Design Studio. In addition, there's a number of other city staff from other bureaus who are available to answer questions should you have any. For your information, the River Plan South Reach record can be found on the BPS South Reach website in boxes located in the BPS offices at 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue and in electronic files. So our plan for today is to provide you with an overview of testimony that has been received. And then we will turn it back over to you to walk through the amendments that we have. At this point, and it looks like you're showing all of my notes, Jeff. And then we'll walk through the vote on the November 4th amendments that were already moved and seconded. Then we'll move on to the McAdam Character Statement Amendment. And at that point, Cassie Ballou will provide an overview of that amendment because it's extensive. Then we will move to the mayor, I believe, has an amendment related to the Oregon State Marine Board and then any other amendments that we might have. After that, we'll revisit our next steps that at this point include a session on December 10th and one on December 16th. So if there aren't other questions, we'll just move on to...
Just 1 second, I'm trying to get this shared, sorry.
Okay.
Looks like we got it. Oh, it went away again.
Yeah, I'm trying to, okay, I think it actually is showing, I just wasn't sure. Okay, we're good. Sorry about that.
No worry.
Okay, take it away, Jeff.
Okay, so thank you, Sally. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Jeff Cottle from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. As Sally said, we wanted to do a quick reminder on the components of the River Plan South Reach, which is an update to the 1987 Willamette Greenway Plan. The 20-year plan includes a renewed vision for the area, a policy framework, updates to comprehensive plan policies and the zoning code and associated maps, and then a collection of implementation actions to achieve the vision. The plan also contains natural and scenic resources protection plans, which inventory and make recommendations on the protections of these important resources. In addition, we're updating the Willamette River Greenway inventory to ensure that the most up-to-date information is in the document, including the final River Plan South Reach changes. So just wanted to revisit exactly where we are in the city. The next two maps show the South Reach project area, and it's outlined in the red sort of dotted line. To fit the slide, north is to your left, and north is, so you can see there, the bridge that's shown is the Ross Allen Bridge, and the River Plan South Reach extends all the way south, and actually I guess I'll note that the south waterfront is not included in the South Reach, that's actually part of the Central Reach. So the River Plan South Reach goes all the way down to the city boundary to the south, and then also includes, and so the city boundary is in the pink if you can see it, and then it also includes the unincorporated neighborhood, unincorporated Multnomah County, a neighborhood of Riverdale Dunthorpe, which is just south of the city. And the city has planning authority for unincorporated Multnomah County pockets, such as the Riverdale Dunthorpe area. And so after city council makes a decision on this project, the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners will hold a hearing and also adopt the plan. So before we go have further discussions on the plan and potential amendments, we wanted to provide a brief summary of the testimony received prior to the close of the record on November 11th. So notification of the hearing was sent to stakeholders in early October, and submission of written testimony was available from October 12th to November 11th, 2020. So we received a total of 20 stakeholders provided written testimony. And then at the November 4th hearing, 13 people provide oral testimony as well. So this slide shows, highlights some of the topics that were raised in testimony. There was much interest in an expanded river setback and the potential for the extension of a slow no wake zone in the South Reach. Testimony was received both for and against the application of a slow no wake zone, which is under consideration by the Oregon State Marine Board. As a reminder, the city of Portland does not regulate boating. It only regulates the land along the river. Testimony related to establishing direct access to the riverfront in the Brooklyn neighborhood was also received from a number of stakeholders. And then finally, a number of pieces of testimony identified potential updates to the proposed McAdam character statement. So Cassie Ballou is here to provide additional information on the testimony and subsequent discussions with the Neighborhood Association. So Cassie, if you want to take it away.
All right, thanks, Jeff. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. At the November 4th hearing, Commissioner Fritz asked us to work with the neighborhood to revise and strengthen the McAdam character statement. And the testimony we received on November 4th primarily centered around three issues, including strengthening the response to South McAdam Boulevard by adding more detailed language, recognizing the unique sub-areas of the boulevard and how each requires different development responses. Next, strengthening the direction for development along the riverfront and greenway and adding language that should direct development to step away from the river setback and provide responsive landscaping. And the third and final issue centered on emphasizing the importance of preserving public view sheds and view streets. And then on November 13th, we had a really productive meeting with the South Portland Neighborhood Association to discuss these issues and ways to revise the statement to address them. I just wanted to take a moment to thank the neighborhood for their time, effort, and commitment to ensuring that this policy is successful, and their effort is really appreciated. Next slide. Oh, sorry, you're already on. So to help frame this testimony, I thought I would provide a little more information about the design-related elements in the River Plan South Reach Plan for the McAdam area. We recommend the repeal of the McAdam Corridor Design Guidelines and the implementation of the Design Overlay Zone Amendment, or DOZA Citywide Design Guidelines. And previous testimony to PSC was supportive of this change, but concerned about losing context found in the McAdam Guidelines. And so in response to these concerns, staff recommended including a McAdam character statement within the citywide design guidelines. So with that, I'm going to pass this back to Sally to continue the presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff and Cassie. That was terrific. And Cassie, we look forward to hearing more from you about the specifics of the amendment in a little bit. So Commissioner Hardesty, that concludes the staff introduction. So I will pass it back to you to talk about the First Amendment.
Thank you very much, Sally and Cassie. Appreciate you both. You did an excellent job. I would like to move the amendments to the McAdam character statement that are contained in Attachment A to the November 30th memo.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you.
There's a motion and a second. Sally?
Yes. I was hoping that Cassie could just describe those very briefly.
Yes, please.
Great. Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you.
So I think we want to go to the next slide. Next slide. There we go. So in response to the testimony and comments on the character statement, staff has proposed a number of changes, and these were a result of the collaboration I mentioned between staff and the community on November 13th and additional comments received from you, Commissioner Hardesty, on November 24th. First, staff responded to requests to strengthen language and add more detail to the character statement on the character of South McAdam Boulevard. The additional language identifies the unique scale and density of each part of the corridor and how development should respond to it. Next, many of the requested changes focused on public views to the riverfront. Staff worked with the community to strengthen this direction and clarify that this refers to public view sheds and view streets. The intent of this language is to make the riverfront area more inviting for everyone and to preserve views down streets to the waterfront. And then there was also a request to add a new symbol to the area map on the first page. This revision will identify an existing pedestrian trail along South Richardson Street that also provides access across South McAdam Boulevard. The intent is to guide development at these intersections and along the corresponding streets to provide pedestrian access and help strengthen the east-west connections within the district. Next slide. And finally, staff responded to requests to strengthen the guidance for how development should respond along the riverfront. Language was added, guiding development to transition away from the river setback using step downs and step backs. Changes also emphasize the importance of landscaping and trees within the setback. On a whole, we believe these amendments improve the statement and better reflect the goals of the McAdam community. So now I'll pass it back to Commissioner Hardesty, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you all have.
Thank you very much, Cassie. Okay, so we had a move and we second. Mayor, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Yeah, Commissioner Hardesty, I just want to be clear as I'm looking at my notes. So it's my understanding we have to vote on the amendment package that we moved and seconded on November 4th. And then, of course, you're referring now to the November 30th memo. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mayor.
Okay, so first of all, we have to vote on the amendment package that we moved and seconded on November 4th.
That is
Sally, is that correct?
That's correct.
So is there any further discussion on that? Then we'll get to the character statement. Let's go ahead and call the roll then on the amendment package that we moved and seconded on November 4th. And everybody should have received that from Keelan.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye. My apologies, Mayor. Looks like I had moved way down on my talking points.
No worries. No, I knew what you were doing.
Thank you. Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. So that package is approved, and Commissioner Hardesty then moved and Commissioner Fritz seconded the McAdam character statement that was referred to or referenced in the November 30, 2020 memo that we got from BPS planner Cassie Ballou, correct?
That is correct, Mayor.
Okay, that's good. And those amendments are contained in attachment A to the November 30 memo. Let's do this. Let's open the written record for comments on this until Monday, December 7th at 8 a.m. And I'm going to repeat that because the way we did that is confusing. So the written record will be open for comment on the amendment that Commissioner Hardesty made until Monday, December 7th at 8 a.m. That'll give us time to consider any modifications to this at our December 10th meeting. And I will ask my fellow commissioners, are there any other amendments that anybody else would like to offer at this time or that you'd like to discuss? And if not, I have one. So as was referenced earlier, I move to delete action item R11D, volume 1.2, page 394. That item places the City of Portland in an advocacy position in the OSMB rulemaking process regarding a no-wake zone. The City of Portland does not have regulatory authority over no-wake or wake zones and has not been convening a committee or administrating a rulemaking process that balances all of the factors to designate such zones. Therefore, I believe that this action item is inappropriate. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a second from Commissioner Hardesty, and that is now on the table. Commissioners, are there any other amendments that anybody would like to put on the table at this time? Commissioner Fritz. I'm sorry, Commissioner Ryan had his hand up first. I apologize. Commissioner Ryan.
You're on mute, Ryan.
I know. That. Sorry. Yeah. And also, I had my hand up from who knows when.
No worries. Okay. Commissioner Fritz, you're up.
So I don't understand the amendment that you just put on the table. This just puts us in an advocacy position, and we have the testimony that that community members would like us to advocate for this, why are we deleting it? We're just saying we're going to leave it entirely to the State Marine Board?
I will leave that for a staff response.
Sally, would you like to respond to that question?
Certainly. The Oregon State Marine Board is in the middle of a rulemaking process regarding wakes on the Willamette River. They had a session in late October where they made a decision to establish some pass-through zones along the Willamette. And at that meeting, they decided to propose an additional amendment that they will hear in, I believe it's in January, at their meeting in January. So the amendment that the Planning and Sustainability Commission proposed was an action item that asked the City Council to prepare a petition to the Oregon State Marine Board to create slow no wake zones along the stretch of the river. So the amendment that the mayor is presenting would eliminate the action item, the specific action item in the plan.
Could you put it back up on the screen, please?
Yeah, and if I could add some commentary on this, and Commissioner Fritz, I had extensive discussions about this with my staff this morning. There are city bureaus that are on different sides of this coin as well, including the fire bureau. So at this point, we just felt it was premature for us to take that advocacy position without further discussion.
But that was the action item was a recommendation from the Planning and Sustainability Commission.
I understand that.
Yeah, it was, Mayor, I support us removing this as well. I honestly believe that we should allow them to do the work that they're currently involved in. And January is not a long time to wait to find out what the resolution will be to this particular issue.
So let me understand, so we will just be neutral on this issue. And I'm assuming that this one also will have a written record. The written record is open for comments on this amendment.
That is correct.
Yeah, and Commissioner Fritz, city bureaus and the Planning and Sustainability Commission have both already provided testimony to the Oregon State Marine Board. So that testimony has already been provided.
Okay, I'll be interested to see what community testimony is. We've heard about this a lot over many years. And so, I'm concerned about it. It seems like we are changing course from what we have done over many years. But I'll be interested to see the testimony. Thank you.
All right, good. Any further questions or discussion on this? Hearing none, Commissioner Hardesty, is there anything else you have for today on this item?
Yes, Mayor. I just want to take a couple of minutes to really appreciate the process for both of these amendments and to the South Reach Plan as a whole. For these amendments, I know myself and several of my colleagues had questions and suggestions about how to best finalize this proposal. And I feel that my questions were met with thoughtful answers and suggestions with an effort to incorporate my ideas. I had some thoughts on how to improve the language of the McAdam Charter Statement and found the Bureau to be really engaged and responsive to my concerns. So I really want to thank the staff and my colleagues for working to make this the best policy possible. As for a South Reach Plan in general, I appreciate that it is a very complex policy with many people wishing certain aspects of it were different. As I have asked questions about this proposal, I have routinely been impressed that the reasons for pursuing one option over another have largely been based on community feedback. This type of meaningful engagement should be applauded and emulated across the city. I hope that all the community members that were involved in this process stay engaged with the city on how we can best manage the Willamette River. And thank you to all the participants in crafting this policy. I also want to take a moment to appreciate Sally Edmonds, Jeff Caldwell, and Joe Zender, the big three from BPS, and also Sam Diaz from your office, Mayor, for his help in helping us make today possible. And so on that note, I have nothing else to offer, Mayor.
All right, very good. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. That concludes this item for today. Written testimony is now open for comments on the McAdam character statement until Monday, December 7th at 8 a.m. Council will return on Thursday, December 10th at 2 p.m., time certain, for a vote on the amendments moved and seconded today, and a vote on the entire River Plan, South Reach, and Willamette Greenway inventory. At that meeting, we will also have a vote on revised findings report. The second reading is currently scheduled for December 16th at 10:45 a.m. Now there's something to look forward to. Thank you, everybody. That concludes our agenda for this afternoon, and we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.